Hey everybody, welcome back to Circuit Breaker episode... I think I said last week was episode number 6 and I was mistaken, it was episode number 5. This is actual real episode number 6. And I have Maria Brackenridge with me. Maria is a huge part of both the maker side of the scene in Dallas as well as the engineering and all doing cool stuff with IoT. So Maria, who are you and what do you do?
Okay, I'll introduce myself. So my name is Maria Brackenridge, and I have been part of the IoT community going on almost 5 years now. My current company is the Buckner Company, and I basically am working in smart community building. So taking urbanization and figuring out what are the trends, what are some of the things and the issues that we need to address in terms of future cities and how we want to incorporate technology into those cities.
And you're actually doing it. I mean, the thing is, we keep on hearing about smart cities everywhere. We keep on seeing all these things, but you're actually implementing cool things.
Yes,
so what is a cool example of some of the stuff you guys have actually done? Because I know in like a couple of our past guests, there's some things you cannot talk about yet, but there's a lot of cool stuff that you can talk about. And what is one of those cool smart city things that is actually like usable? Because we keep on hearing the stuff and it's actually there.
So. Correct, yes. So one of the things that I like about what I'm doing right now is we are not talking about smart cities in the sense of how do we make a city smart? We're actually looking at a city and saying, what is it that we want as people? We have to work, live, and play in these communities and these cities. And what is it exactly that defines whether that makes them smart or not? Is it the car that you get into in the morning? Is it the actual coffee that you can order via an app? Is it the fact that your app learns what kind of coffee you like in the morning? Or is it the fact that when you walk on a street, that street knows that you're walking on that street? And so we talk about some of the things that we want to do in terms of incorporating into a future city. So for example, one of the things that we are looking at right now, and unfortunately we do take disasters that have happened here in Texas.
Yeah.
If you look at the hurricanes, the massive storms, the massive amount of rain that fell in the Houston, Beaumont, Gulf Coast area, mm-hmm. It becomes an opportunity.
Then the fires right now in California, which are, the picture I've already seen on the 405, and it just looks like this glowing, scary thing in the mountains. That's like a huge thing too, right? And then Napa Valley as well.
And you think about, let's take Napa Valley for instance. You look at all those vineyards. Those are people's livelihoods. Those are things that we actually go visit in terms of tourism. And there's a number of us that would sit down and have a glass of wine for dinner. And you think about that fire has now destroyed it. So what if we could go back in time? What if we could say, I am aware that fire or rain or flood or anything along those lines in terms of a natural interruption could happen. What if we could predict it with smart technologies? What if we could take weather thermometers? What if we could take predictive analysis around wind, storm, rain, and say, we think something's coming. Let's try and save our livelihood. Let's save the grapes. Let's save the vineyard. Let's save these things.
So turn on sprinklers maybe and get a little bit more saturated so the fire doesn't happen because it's
exactly.
wet down or something.
Or maybe put down, you know, environmentally friendly chemicals that have been invested in and that are available to stop the fire from spreading amongst grapes in the vineyards. Or maybe you harvest those grapes a week early and you have a different type of wine that you're making just to make sure that you don't lose your entire crop. So we look at things like that, but it takes having technology. It takes platforms, it takes software and hardware, it takes the integration of all those systems to ensure that not only are we looking at data and using that in data to interpret what could happen, but those devices are actually giving us smart insights. And that's the difference, I think, when we talk about smart cities or smart communities. We're actually talking about things that make us intelligent.
And then you're doing safety as well, right? You're helping save lives because there's a path where lots of folks are walking. I don't know how much you can talk about that, but you're saving those folks' lives too, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're giving them a way to call out and get help.
Exactly. So recently, and I think I've shared this with you, Adam, is that my daughter went to university.
Yeah.
So she's moved out. She's now at university. And as a parent, I don't really think that you lose that tie to your child just because you don't see them every day. And she'd probably kill me if I called her a child, but you don't lose that ability to care about somebody. So what we've done is we've integrated a wearable. The wearable allows her to let us, you know, monitor only specific activities. She does not want me to monitor the fact that she's getting home at 2 a.m. or she doesn't want me monitoring the fact that she's not even leaving her apartment until 11:30 in the morning. But she wants me to monitor it if somebody approaches her in a car that she doesn't know that propositions her to go and do or be somewhere that she's not supposed to be.
Well, and that's a huge safety aspect from the athlete's side, too. You've been working on that for a long time,
yes,
right? A lot of major universities have had female athletes and unfortunate circumstances around that. And so that's where this all stemmed from, right? This
yes.
project stemmed from all of the unfortunate circumstances around that.
And I think a lot of these solutions that we try and design and we try and make sure fit with technology is actually allowing technology to be an enabler. It's allowing that athlete to actually have some freedom. We don't need to monitor them every single place they go. We don't need to monitor every weight that they lift. But we do need to know if there's some place where they're not and they're causing a crime or they are disrupting somebody else's life. So we are using that type of technology via wearable to actually alert somebody without that person, the perpetrator, maybe knowing. A lot of people, if they took their phone out and dialed 911 as a perpetrator, you would know, okay, they're calling for help. You really might not know that I'm not wearing a Fitbit, but I'm wearing an SOS band.
Yeah.
And I can click that SOS and already somebody has got my GPS location. Somebody is aware that I'm in trouble because maybe my heart rate is up or I didn't respond to my text on my phone. And you are already in a situation where somebody's coming for your help. So you can respond better in the situation as a victim. If the athlete is doing something he shouldn't be doing, then at least we have the ability to say, time-stamped, we know you were here, we know what you were up to.
And those records cannot be hidden either, which is another huge
It's real time.
It's audited too, because it's out in the cloud, it's secure, and it's
yes.
it's available by a third party versus somebody giving a report of some sort, and you can shuffle that report away.
Exactly.
Which has happened a lot of times too.
So now you have a record, a ledger. You actually have the ability to say, you're not going to refute what happened.
Right. Right.
And which then, is scary, right,
which
for some of us.
That's hugely scary. And then there's another key point to it, which we've been working with another startup and also getting a lot of help with that one too, which hopefully I'll get Henry in here soon and he can really talk about whatever it takes. But that's the next step, right, is now you've got this wearable that not only protects the athletes but also gives them metrics that they can improve in certain ways as well
yeah.
or know that they've been potentially injured on the field and get pulled off from a concussive perspective or some other thing. And so, you know, you don't have an athlete hurting themselves in some manner, form, or fashion, or some dangerous
or
thing
preventing
happening.
Them from
yes.
having a serious injury. So half the time, this data is actually allowing us to take preventative measures. It's allowing us to make a decision about an action that we would like to take. And it's about keeping someone safe and healthy. So we talk about privacy and we talk about the issues of you're infringing on my rights, you're infringing on my ability to stay safe. But if you turned that around and you actually said, I want to help you, and you formulate the argument by saying the technology should enable, it should not corrupt, but it should be used for the right use case, the right application.
Right.
So somebody like Henry's application, whatever it takes, he could actually tell whether somebody was dehydrated during a training or practice or during game prep. And we could take that person off the field and say, we just need to hydrate you. We do not need you falling down, breaking a leg, or pulling a ligament because you didn't have enough fluids in you.
No.
Or maybe you didn't get enough sleep the night before and you're not ready to play 4 hours of football. Let's get you a little bit more prepared next time. So we're just taking these preventative measures to stop things that could possibly harm us, which is exactly back to the example I gave about maybe my daughter gets into trouble, she presses an SOS. We have prevented something bad from happening.
So all this cool stuff this year, what's got you excited about next year?
So I think I'm looking more at how systems need to integrate. How do systems need to actually interact with one another? I'm really looking at cryptocurrencies and how do those cryptocurrencies create ledgers, real-time information for us to maybe buy a car, buy a house before we even know about it. It's just so painful to go through all of those types of things like the paperwork and my background. What if all of that could be changed in a profile?
So that's
what
funny.
If you had that, you know, internet-based kind of secured, locked profile? where you just called up your Audi dealership or your Lexus dealership and you said, just check out my profile. When can I pick up my car? You know the type of needs that I have. You know me as a person. You know I'm definitely not going to drive a bright red car, but I might drive a silver. And you know that I'm definitely going to want a hybrid over something that's not, because I want to be environmentally friendly. Because right. there are people out there that that's how they make their decisions. So I'm kind of excited about internet profiles that are completely secured, completely locked.
But learning.
But learning all the time about my needs before maybe even I recognize that that's a need that I need to have.
That's cool. I'd really like to see
a little bit more of that.
So, you know, it brings up a good point, because last week we talked with Kurt, and Kurt and I, a large part of what we were talking about, which is really interesting, was, you know, it has to learn, but it has to get access to your data. But then you just brought it up 5 times in the last, which in a good way, which was it has to be locked. Mm-hmm. So how does that happen? Because it's still got to go out and learn against something. And so it's got to have that comparative engine and go learn. And so how does that happen? What have you seen that allows that to happen?
I think we need to turn it around. We seem to believe that once we have developed a technology, once a software program is available, we can use it to design an application. What if in my mind I'm designing the application, and now I need to go out and figure out, well, how does the technology enable what is in my brain, what I've already constructed and designed in my brain? All I need the bits and the bytes and the atoms to actually design it so that it's there for me. I think we need to turn it around sometimes where it's the consumer that's it. We start with them. It's from our heart, or it's from what we desire, what we need, and what we want, rather than us trying to fit technology in. Because if you can create it, you can hack it. So we need technology that basically has that vault around it where it's not getting hacked, because nobody knows me as well as I know me. Nobody has some of those keys or that 4 or 5 layers of security that I may have. And they can't hack or encrypt.
So it's behind that principle of, you know, two-factor, which is something you know and something you have, and then maybe something else like environmental, right? Because mm-hmm. there's that, well, you're always going to be home. And then you also, you know you're at home, and you know you're the password, and then you also have something. So it's like either biometric or something like that. So
right.
that's the couple layers of security, which we're getting at some of it, right? There's two-factor out there already. And kind of depending on how you use it on your device with your other devices, right? So you have to log into your phone. There's a token on there, so you get the rotating token, and then there's a password, and then those two pieces allow you to log into your website on whatever browser you're using, not be your mobile device, but some other third device. And so those kind of exist. Now we're moving to the next bit, right? So now you're adding predictive algorithms to it and machine yes. learning and things like that. So that's kind of the cool part for next year, and bots.
But you also have an issue. How many tablets, how many devices, how many things do we use in a day? Whether we get into our car, whether we use a smart coffee maker in the morning, it's already started before we've even left our house. And then how many cities and communities have said the only way that we're going to remain competitive is to have ubiquitous Wi-Fi? So now if I go into 4 or 5 cities in a day, not only are my devices syncing, but they're finding those Wi-Fis and those Bluetooths, and we're syncing up. And is that putting a problem for me? And to me, yes, because now my data, my phone, my devices are all syncing with my environment without me really giving it permission to do that.
Well, that, and then I just talked to everything that secured your device in between you and your device and your screen, but we didn't talk about the network. To your point, you're connecting to some rogue network.
Exactly.
Is it secure? Is somebody else on the network? Is there a man in the middle?
And we don't know, because we're just assuming, which is a horrible thing to do, that somebody has put security there, that somebody's protecting us, that somebody's making it safe. And so when I talk about a locker, or I talk about things that we need to actually be able to design, that profile needs to be so secured that it's only me, like my fingerprints or whatever it is that's just personally me. And I'm not sure we're there yet. I really don't think we are. I think you can probably hack a lot of the solutions and systems out there. But these are the questions and the discussions that I think we need to be having in 2018 if we are going to meet our desires, wants, and needs as consumers.
And allow the users to change their password, too, because that was the other big thing that caused problems this year.
Oh, yes,
it's all the security cameras that were stuck to password, and you could not change the default password from
exactly.
Password.
Well, and they had, it was an article, I think it was in the Brookings, and they were talking about people in Houston where they lost their computers, they lost certain things because they had almost no time to leave their homes. And so now we're asking them for their passwords, or we need documents. We need things for you to show us to prove in order for you to get assistance or to get help. Well, these people don't have those things. It got washed away in water, or it got left in their home. So how do we help people actually have some kind of device that is secured with their profile so we know that it's them and that we can look at them and say, yep, that's definitely Adam. I am going to give him assistance. Here's a voucher for a hotel tonight. Yeah. As opposed to, yeah, I think that's an evil twin who didn't lose his house and he's committing fraud. Exactly.
The soap opera effect.
But we need to ask ourselves these issues because there are, like we talked a little bit about, there are people that are corrupt and they will hack and they will do things to try and get around the system. And we need to design systems that have that ability to address that.
Well, and sometimes we have to hack for good as well because we're working around a broken system.
Exactly.
You know, like Puerto Rico right now is a total disaster in that sense. You know, they're saying, well, you have to go on the internet to get something and there is no internet.
And there's no internet.
So
I mean, some people
do?
Don't even have electricity.
Yeah.
So when the systems break down, what is our backup plan? How are we actually going to provide assistance to people that really could need it? But the basics in life, like water or energy, food, we need to make sure that people have those things because it's a humane thing to do. And yet technology enabled us to give those things before a natural disaster, but is corrupting it so that we can't do it after.
Right. And then the smart city allows that to happen, right? Because, again, going back to it's preventative as well as helping. And even with smart cities in Puerto Rico, I mean, they're using drones to provide connectivity now.
Correct.
And they're using balloons and all sorts of other various interesting, I don't know, gadgets. I don't know any other better way to put it because they're basically like just oversized, not pocket-sized gadgets, but oversized gadgets to provide connectivity.
Or what if we had or installed or been able to have portable desalination plants for water? We could have taken the water that is completely surrounding Puerto Rico and actually purified it and been able to desalinate it so that people could drink it.
Right.
And what happens if we'd use those waters and those oceans for generating wind energy and they could actually light up a grid?
Or that's Italy. That's what's going on in Italy right now is they're using some of that wave technology. I don't know if it's Italy or London. I'll have to go back and check, but they're one of the two is using that, right?
I believe it's the UK.
UK is using wave technology to generate a lot of their power. It's fantastic. I mean,
Scotland has lit up. I think I read it was over 20,000 homes with some of their wind farm technology. But these are things that people are putting into place now so that if there is a disaster or something happens, then they're not completely down.
Right.
We don't lose the ability to provide the basics of life to citizens. Because when everything is said and done, you and I pay our taxes, and I'm sure I would not be a happy camper if I was still sitting in Puerto Rico 2 months later without electricity after I had paid my taxes and paid my dues.
You sort of went through it, earlier this year or last year? I forgot when the giant hailstorm was. I mean, punched through your solar panel, through your roof, and took out a good chunk of your house. I mean, that was...
71 solar panels completely decimated. And you start to think about it and you go, but I thought you said that these were weatherproof. Okay, but the exception to that rule is there. And so when you're taking 71 solar panels off your roof and you're thinking, okay, well, how am I getting electricity? You know, there's a backup to a backup to a backup. Yeah. But it did teach me that there are certain things that have to be in place because a natural disaster can hit anybody. I live in suburbia.
Yeah.
And I live here in North Texas. It's not like I live on the ocean where it's prominent or something could happen.
Right.
But I must admit, I was so glad that I did have some systems in place so that when the insurance company called, I knew exactly the information they needed. They could verify my ID and we could get hold of money if need be.
Yeah.
Because we're not completely down or off the grid.
And you were able to get to a place for shelter for a couple of weeks while the entire place got, because you have no roof, so you need to be somewhere else while that's getting rebuilt and everything else. Right.
Yeah. So. And you could pretty much ask my daughter how horrible it is to live in, you know, a 2-bed hotel room with mom and dad for 6 weeks. It is not fun.
A teenage daughter in high school, I'm sure that went over well.
It went over really badly.
And then her wardrobe missing as well, right?
Exactly. Completely gone. And the car. So you take away the nice things in life and you'd be amazed at how disruptive things happen. So, yeah.
Well, very cool. What else is going on? I mean, what else cool stuff are you working on?
Some of the things I'm really interested in as well is logistics and intermodal ports and seaports. I think that we are such a global economy. I think we're going to see a lot of other countries that are going to be putting in smart technologies. We're probably going to be learning and adopting a lot of what Europe and you know, some of the Middle Eastern countries, Asia Pacific. There are some excellent technologies out there, and I think we're going to start to learn to share a lot more.
Well, no, and that's a huge thing, right? So actually, that's a great point, especially since we just came out of Black Friday.
Mm-hmm.
My day job has to deal with a lot of this on a regular basis, and that's another place to find. But the biggest thing that we're running into now is we're on a shortage of truckers. We're legitimately running out of drivers who are running. So it goes back to intermodal. We have a huge shortage in truckers. We don't have a way to get stuff from point A to point B. And so how does it get to the store? And then also, we're shipping stuff back and forth. I know Kurt talked about this last week, is China is refusing our waste. And so I didn't realize it was cheaper to send our waste over to a foreign country than it was from one state to the other. Because again, that goes back to how do you transport it and logistics behind it. And then logistics to get that stuff from back from the other country, back from China again, back into the store.
Exactly.
So you have stuff that, you know, you're going to send a bunch of full boats here, but the boats have to go back. They're going to want to go back full because they make money that way. If they're going back empty, that's not valuable to them.
No, absolutely not. And I think if you go online, you could probably see it. There was a demo by a company that was at CES last year, or this year, actually. And they were showing the traveling of a Coke can. A Coke can that left Los Angeles and actually did a 27,000-mile trip before it ended up less than 200 miles from its original destination. So you think about the waste. You think about, why are we doing this? But it's because we didn't know. We had no idea that that can that traveled and left from Los Angeles traveled all the way back to California. So now, if we're able to track and see and monitor and actually use different modes of transportation, maybe we won't send that can on such an amazing journey.
Or we send all the coupons to Mexico, so every clipped coupon ends up in Mexico to get scanned and then redeemed to the grocery store. So like when I clip 50 cents off my Oreos, literally they send it from the grocery store to Mexico and then it gets processed.
Yes, or maybe that can will be used to create new small apartments that could be used for homeless people.
Or tiny homes. Yeah, I mean, it's great.
Tiny homes. Anything like that where we're trying to find solutions to hit some of the biggest problems that we have in society today. And we look at what people need to live, and then we can see and work backwards from there. And I think that's what needs to happen if we are going to be successful at creating these smart communities. Let's work backwards, but let's also learn from what people have done and done successfully. Because that way we can say we're incorporating the best of the best.
Yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah.
So this is an exciting year, and it's been an exciting year, especially seeing all the cool stuff you've built, and can't wait to see what you guys can announce finally, because you guys are getting ready to announce a whole bunch of stuff, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So we'll have you back on to announce all those cool things.
Mm-hmm.
Where can people find you online or wherever? So LinkedIn?
So, yes, you can go on LinkedIn. You can find me there. We are still, you know, some of the things doing in a stealth mode. So we have to wait until we can really get out there. But there's also projects that are going to be announced so that you'll be able to see what we're up to, what we're doing.
Okay. So in the show notes, I'll put Maria's LinkedIn profile.
Yeah.
And maybe her, some sort of contact some other way, like Twitter or something, whatever.
Yeah, they know my Twitter and they know my email. So, I mean, you can get that out. So.
Well, cool. Thank you so much.
Hey, anytime.
And thank you to Nerdvana for letting us use the studio. We're so grateful for them to have host us here. And we will catch you next week. I forget who the guest is going to be next week, but I will let you guys know. Thanks.